Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Emma Frere on how Catholicism is trending in America's power centers.
On a subconscious level, you start to think, well, maybe I should be Catholic too. If you're seeing these smart, well-read, devout people who are Catholic, it's quite natural that, you know, you would admire them and maybe want to emulate their life choices in many areas, including their Catholicism.
Emma Frere, next. Journalist Emma Frere writes, far more Catholics convert to Protestant denominations than vice versa, but you wouldn't know it if you looked only at places like Washington, D.C., and some influential university campuses. She writes that Catholics now provide much of the conservative movement's intellectual horsepower, and they're picking up Protestant converts along the way. Spencer Dahlke talks with her about her world piece, The Lure of Rome.
Obviously, there was an idea that planted in your mind and you took hold of that. Where'd that idea come from? And could you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, this article has a very clear origin on a Sunday morning in July. I had gone into Washington, D.C. I live in Maryland, but I had gone into Washington, D.C. to attend the inaugural service of Christ Church Washington, which is a church from the denomination co-founded by Doug Wilson. I wrote a story about that. That was in the December issue of World. And then after that, I headed over to another part of Capitol Hill to an Anglican church called Church of the Resurrection. That was not for a story. I was just meeting one of my friends who goes there. And when I arrived there, their service was over and they were in the process of setting up for a lecture titled, I believe it was, Should I Convert to Rome? And it was basically explaining to people why they should stay Anglican and not convert to Roman Catholicism. And so, just for context for your readers, they may not be aware, but Church of the Resurrection is a very prominent conservative church in Washington, D.C. If you're a faithful Christian and you're, you know, coming to D.C. to work in the Trump administration or for a member of Congress, this would definitely be a church that you would consider. So a lot of movers and shakers attend there. So the fact that they were having a talk like this, it just immediately kind of set off my journalist's radar. I thought, what's going on here? They must be doing this for a reason. It's kind of a niche topic. There must be a problem. And so, yeah, I started asking around and I started hearing all these stories that young conservatives come to Washington, D.C. and they convert to Catholicism. And specifically, they come often, you know, from more typical American evangelical backgrounds, and then they move into a more liturgical tradition, and often an Anglican church like Church of the Resurrection is kind of their last stop before they swim the Tiber and become Roman Catholic. And so Church of the Resurrection in particular has just had a lot of members converting to Catholicism, and they decided that they were going to, you know, address the issue head on and go on the offensive. So yeah, I knew right away that that was an important topic to write about.
While we're on that subject, I'm just kind of curious. I have observed how, yeah, like the Anglican church does tend to be sort of like this intermediary. What would the Anglican church say about, like, because they're similar liturgically, I'm given to understand. So I guess what's the argument for remaining Anglican?
Well, the pastor who led the talk, Jacob Rodriguez, talked about the spiritual goods of Anglicanism and Protestantism generally. And several of them that he focused on included gospel clarity. That's one that the Catholic Church, just in his mind at least, adds a lot of doctrine, and the gospel is presented much more clearly in Protestant churches. So he wasn't trying to anathemize or stigmatize Catholicism in any way, but he just felt that the Anglican Church does a better job of presenting the gospel. And then he also explained, you know, why he doesn't believe that the Pope is actually the head of the church. He went through a very extensive discussion of church history. And also, there's just any number of Catholic doctrines that the Anglican Church disagrees with, you know, particularly, say, related to Mary, the mother of Jesus. So he went through all of those in his talk.
One of the things that you wrote about in your article before we kicked off is just this really interesting thing that you discovered, that people tend to convert from Catholicism to Protestantism rather than the other way around, which is interesting that you noticed in power centers that you call, you know, like DC. I think you also maybe mentioned some university campuses. People tend to actually, tends to be the opposite.
Yeah, the data is just very clear on that. Only 2% of Americans who were raised Protestant are now Catholic. So it's a tiny, tiny number, but 14% of Americans raised Catholic are now Protestant. And the Catholic Church loses a lot more members than Protestant churches. In fact, the decline of American rates of church attendance and religious identification is predominantly driven by the Catholic Church. And I tend to think those numbers might be even more abysmal were it not for the fact that we, in recent years, have had a lot of immigration from Catholic countries in Central and South America. That's helped keep it from being worse than it is. And I mean, I live in Maryland, which is, you know, a historically more Catholic area. And every church that I've attended here has a huge number of former Catholics. I think many Protestants can identify with that experience, that people they know were raised Catholic. So definitely the national drift is Catholics either leaving their church or converting to Catholicism. But then there's this strange wave of counter conversions, and it really punches above its weight because this tends to happen in power centers like Washington, D.C., and in specific college campuses, so Notre Dame, Georgetown. I've been told that Hillsdale in particular is a major center of conversion to Catholicism. The student body, at least when it comes in, is majority Protestant, but the faculty is majority Catholic. So these young Protestants come in and they see these great books. They read Thomas Aquinas for the first time. If they've grown up in a church that has a lighter theological emphasis, doesn't emphasize the church fathers very much, then they're easily kind of sucked into this notion that all the church fathers were Catholic. And they compare their Protestant youth pastor to Thomas Aquinas, and they say, well, obviously Thomas Aquinas is right, even though that's a very unfair comparison.
Why do you think there is this conversion to Catholicism among, like, in like DC, is it kind of the same? It would make sense that if you're at a university campus reading some of these classic books and like comparing it with your church, that you're going to see that sort of thing, I imagine. But is there a lot of reading that goes on in DC that prompts that, or is there?
It's more driven by the fact that the conservative movement is largely led by Catholics. That's just an undeniable fact. The intellectual horsepower of the conservative movement in Washington is predominantly Catholic. And it's very normal for people to look for role models in their career. We all do this. We think, you know, who is in the position that I want to be in 20 years and how did they get there? And if all those people are Catholic, then it's very natural that even on a subconscious level, I'm not saying that there's, you know, this Machiavellian calculation of this, but on a subconscious level, you start to think, well, maybe I should be Catholic too. If you're seeing these smart, well-read, devout people who are Catholic, it's quite natural that, you know, you would admire them and maybe want to emulate their life choices in many areas, including their Catholicism.
You name a few reasons why the conservative movement seems to be largely Catholic. Would you care to share what some of those reasons might be?
Yeah, so there are a number of reasons. I think a lot of it goes back to the fact that this is a historically Protestant country. And until sort of the middle of the 20th century, evangelicals dominated the leading institutions of this country. But then as those institutions became more progressive, liberalized, evangelicals, you know, were either pushed out or left. So there were a lot of attempts to start new institutions, but a lot of them were just not very successful. Whereas Catholics are a minority in this country, always have been, which is an interesting position for Catholics in this country, because in many other countries, they're used to being the main church, the church. So in America, they've had to kind of learn to function in a countercultural way, and they started their own institution. So they have that institutional knowledge of how to function in a countercultural institution. So they have a tradition of training up leaders, whereas Protestants have kind of lost that tradition. We lost these institutions in which to train up elites. And once Catholics kind of assumed those positions of influence, that pattern became, you know, self-perpetuating, because once those leaders are there, then, as I mentioned before, there's that idea that people are looking for role models. And so it's going to be a difficult pattern to break. There's a lot that goes into this. Catholicism in America, as I mentioned, because they've been a minority here, has kind of, it's a lot more Protestant maybe than Catholicism in some other countries. I've previously lived in Brazil, and Catholicism there is simply, it's very different than Catholicism here. Here you could walk into a mass, so you might not know if you're in a Catholic or a Protestant church. Whereas like when you go into Brazil, you know you're in a Catholic church. It's something very different, very foreign. And so here the leap is just a lot easier. And people that have converted, I have noticed, tend to be pretty anxious to get other people to convert as well. Whereas say people that are cradle Catholics, they're generally pretty comfortable with the fact that other Christians believe differently, whereas the converts, and this was confirmed in my interviews, that the converts are the ones trying to get other Protestants to convert as well. So everyone I interviewed said that they have their peers trying to convince them to join them in Rome. So that's an interesting dynamic.
You write a little bit about even some of these converts to Catholicism bring sort of a Protestant identity with them, one of which was fractiousness. You know, we have a lot of denominations in the Protestant tradition. How does the Catholic tradition like deal with that tension?
It's not uncommon for people to convert again to a different denomination in the future, to be honest. There are Protestants bring a certain fractiousness with them. As I mentioned before, they're not very used to functioning in institutions. So sometimes that just doesn't go very well. My understanding is that Catholics are aware that that's an issue. People come in, they're converting to Catholicism because they're upset about their home church, about their family background. That tends to not go very well. But, you know, there are certainly people who are just really convinced at a very profound level that Catholicism is the more true expression of the Christian faith. And then those types of converts function well in the overall institution.
My guest today is Emma Frere. She is a senior writer for World Magazine and the author of The Lure of Rome, Why Are So Many Young Protestants in America's Power Centers Converting to Catholicism? An interesting discussion looking at these two traditions and the traffic happening between them. In the last question, you mentioned something about like, you know, converts bringing, shall we say, pressure to convert to Catholicism. How do you see that playing out in like the conservative movement? Is that like a source of, because religious identity is kind of like a big deal for us as human beings, you know, part of our identity. Do you see that being its own sort of tension point in the conservative movement?
When I talked to Brad Littlejohn, he said that he noticed that among Catholics in DC, it's common to make a lot of jokes about Protestants. He said that he had been at a reception once. He'd even tweeted about this, that he was just getting really fed up with the number of jokes being made about Protestants there. So there is a bit of that, but at least at this point, I don't see it being too much of a point of tension. Protestants seem to be okay. We just kind of, we accept it. We roll with it. We continue to let the Catholics lead the movement and make fun of us. So it's kind of the tension is kind of going one way, really.
Teasing is fun. I feel like that could be a source of good humor. We took that well, but anyway.
I like to poke the bear. I interact with a lot of Catholics in my work. And so I like to push back a little bit on them, and they do not handle that well. I've noticed they can dish it out, but they can't take it back. But that's just my personal experience. And I think I'm the only Protestant who's doing that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, as you were doing some of this research for this article, was there anything that you learned that was surprising to you about anything? I suppose I know that's kind of a big question, big scope, but
yes, I was very interested to learn just how much the papacy of Benedict factored into the more recent wave of conversions. I lived in DC as a single lady in 2011, 2012, and Catholic conversion was not that much of a thing at that time. There was a very vibrant Catholic community of young people in Washington that I was aware of and I wasn't really part of. But it was pretty rare to meet a convert, whereas now it seems like I am just constantly running into converts. Every time I go into Washington, when I talked to Brad Littlejohn, he really helped me make sense of that. He was explaining that 2015 is, of course, a very important year in our culture. It was the year Obergefell, the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage, and that Benedict taking a very hard line, a very conservative line on that, did a huge amount to boost this wave conversions. So I thought that was interesting. And even though that wave was strong enough to keep going under Pope Francis, who I know a lot of Catholics were, conservative Catholics were not very happy with. So that was interesting to learn. I've also noticed that there's just this, in certain ways, a kind of a disconnect between these very vibrant, very devout Catholics in places like Washington, D.C. versus Catholicism at large. Throughout most of my life, when I've met Catholics in other places, they tend to be people that, you know, you meet people all the time that say they're baptized Catholic, but I don't know, they go to Mass maybe at Christmas and Easter. They are not living lifestyles that represent Catholic doctrine. But Washington, D.C. is really different from that. The Catholics are very devout. They are living out their faith. And so I think that young conservatives moving into D.C. maybe get a little bit of a skewed picture. They meet Catholic Christians more like themselves. You know, they grew up in Protestant churches where people were devout, people were living a Christian lifestyle, were living biblically. And so they see, they're unsurprised to meet Catholics that are like themselves in Washington. But I'm not sure that that's really an accurate picture of Catholicism more broadly. Because for me personally, having met a lot of non-practicing Catholics in my life, when I learned that this conversion was such a thing, it was kind of surprising. I didn't understand, you know, why would you want to join a church where people are largely non-practicing? But then I realized that in Washington, D.C., it's really very different.
Why do you think that is, that the Catholics they practice their faith more in D.C.? Is it like just because it's kind of a crucible in D.C. where there's a lot of, you know, all eyes are on you and hostile to the, you know, to conservative Christians?
That's a good question, Spencer. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that is definitely part of it. And maybe some of it is it's just reinforcing as well. So once you get that critical mass going, you start attracting those converts that are like-minded, and it keeps going from there.
For the sake of, you know, fairness, I know we've kind of wrapped on our Catholic friends, Catholic brothers even. But from what you've observed, you know, being from the D.C. area, what sort of value do you think Catholic theology brings to the conservative movement? I have thoughts of my own, but I kind of want to hear what yours are.
I mean, it's obvious to me that these Catholic leaders of the conservative movement are very high quality people, very well read, very faithful to specifically about biblical ideas about sexuality. So yeah, there's clearly a lot of value to that. And I understand one of the people I interviewed was a lawyer named Annika Smith, and she was talking about how the Catholic legal movement in particular is very strong because of the influence of Thomas Aquinas. So yeah, I would say these Catholics playing these prominent roles has a very beneficial effect on the movement. What's your theory?
I've been talking with my, over Thanksgiving especially, with my older brother, thinking about, like, it seems to me that Catholics have a particular church structure where they might say that there is, earlier you mentioned raising up elites, you know, people that are fit to govern, shall we say? Like, we kind of like cringe as Americans at that idea. But I wonder if Catholics understand that, well, there are some people that are called to govern and they are more fit and maybe they're more prepared to do that. Protestants, maybe it's more because of the way we build our churches, especially in congregational traditions like the Baptist tradition and this sort of a thing, that it's more emphasized on equality, you know, and governance among the people. Very American, but there's structure that Catholicism brings to the conservative movement and authority. And so there's like strength.
You know, I've heard people say that specifically about the legal movement, because I believe, except for Neil Gorsuch, all the conservative justices on the Supreme Court are Catholic. And yeah, their faith has enabled them to function well in that kind of a setting and be those kind of ruling elites. You might well be right.
What can we members of the Protestant tradition learn from our Catholic friends? I might narrow it down and even say, like, if we are, you know, feel called to political leadership and we end up going to like D.C., somewhere like this, like, what can we learn from our Catholics about how to do that well and represent the conservative movement, represent the gospel well?
Yeah, I mean, the Catholics in Washington, D.C. are great role models of, you know, sticking to biblical values despite cultural pressure to do differently. And they work very hard and also help each other, support each other, advancing in their careers. So I think that that's something we could learn to be, unapologetic about our faith, but just work at a very high level, do our work to a very high standard.
You talk about the shallowness of Protestantism. Would you recommend any resources for our listeners so that if they end up, going to DC and they want to be prepared to, at the very least, have a good researched and rooted discussion with, the Catholics there. Would you have any resources that have been formative for you possibly about what it means to be Protestant?
Dr. Jacob Rodriguez, who I interviewed for the story, said that he believes strongly that anyone that is considering converting to Catholicism should read through Calvin's Institutes and underline every instance where Calvin references the Church Fathers. He says that we have this idea that Catholics are the only ones with an ancient church tradition, but that's simply not accurate. We have what some people call the magisterial Protestant tradition. And so just to see that these ideas are grounded in the teachings of the very earliest fathers of the church, I think that would be a great approach. And I don't know. I mean, I myself have been very much shaped by pastors who relied a lot on that tradition quoted from early church fathers. I would say that that's really the main reason why I've been perfectly happy to be Presbyterian. I've never felt an interest in converting to Catholicism.
You mentioned that, American Catholics can sometimes downplay certain practices to make it more accessible to people of the Protestant tradition. How can we be prepared to think about this? And how can we go about being prudent, trusting our Catholic brothers, but also, have eyes to see, well, are you accurately representing the Catholic tradition?
Well, I would say, the Catholic tradition in America has developed, quite organically because the Catholic Church has been a minority here since really the founding of America. I mean, I'm very happy to see that some of the churches in Washington and other areas where this has been an issue are kind of taking the issue on head on. I mentioned at the beginning that I visited a church founded by Doug Wilson's denomination. They have actually also started a church plant in Hillsdale. I interviewed Doug Wilson for my story, and he said that one of the reasons why they started it was to combat students at Hillsdale converting to Catholicism. They want to show the students that there is a strong Protestant theological tradition that they can be proud of and to present that in a robust way. Then I talked about Church of the Resurrection, setting up this lecture to take the issue head on. There's also another Anglican church that is offering a Sunday school series to children there, many of whom are actually attending Catholic school, to explain why they're Anglican and not Catholic. So I think a lot of churches are becoming more aware of this and trying to just kind of get ahead of the issue. So I think that's really positive.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, journalist Emma Frere. If you'd like to read her World Peace, The Love of Rome, go to wng.org. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Lee Larson on the reach of the Acts 1-8 PAC program, which stands for Planned Acts of Christian Kindness.
Whatever you do it for free. You don't take the recognition because you share the card, which gives Jesus all the glory. And of course, why not do the invite? So you can use that concept in your own neighborhood.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on Pilgrim Radio. Thanks for listening.